Ryan Nichols, you're a great man with some great ideas, a great podcast.
Do you see why he's my favorite libertarian people?
Yes.
He's full of common sense and wisdom.
Brian Nichols here on The Brian Nichols Show.
Welcome to The Brian Nichols Show, your source for common sense politics on the We Are Libertarians Network.
Today I am joined by easily one of the best, Matt Kibbe. Welcome to The Brian Nichols Show.
Hey, Brian, it's good to be with you. By the way, let me take a step back and say I love what you're doing. I love the conversational style, and it's a combination of good fun and serious ideas. I love the fact that your show's doing what it does, and this is how we win the future.
The Brian Nichols Show is the fastest-growing liberty podcast that brings together people from all means of political thought as we seek to have meaningful conversations about the issues you care about.
There's so many things that we can do to make America freer and the world better and safer and more peaceful. Everybody has the responsibility of trying to help to do that. You know, what you're doing with your podcast is a perfect example of, you know, you're doing this as a labor of love and for the cause, and that is exactly what we have to have.
At The Brian Nichols Show, our goal is to leave the audience educated, enlightened, and informed. And now your host, Brian Nichols.
All right, welcome to the Brian Nichols Show. Thanks again for joining in for another fun-filled week of interesting topics, interesting conversation that educates, enlightens, and informs. Hopefully you enjoyed last week's double episode week. We had Matt Kibbe to start the week off, which was a phenomenal way. I like that word, phenomenal. A phenomenal way to start off the week. And then we concluded with our episode there on Friday with Chloe Anagnos talking about America's Future Foundation. And today, we're going to be talking about term limits. I'm joined by Austin Seckel. Now, Austin, we have been working behind the scenes, obviously, to get this set up. And it's been taking a little bit because you're a busy man. So if you could introduce yourself as well as U.S. term limits and the value of the organization you're bringing forward.
So just personally, I'm kind of a liberty movement guy. I got involved in politics through Ron Paul in 2012. I'd say that I actually liked Ron Paul before 2012 in his 2008 presidential campaign, but I never really knew why. As like a young kid, I was in sixth or seventh grade or something. I'm 25 years old right now. And I remember in 2008, just wondering, you know, what was going on in the presidential election. It was, you know, pretty monumental open seat election. And in the Republican primary, my mother is a Republican. I just kind of, you know, drifted in that way just for family ties, not necessarily for ideological reasons. And I looked at the candidates and I saw Ron Paul, and I just, you know, out of curiosity, I just asked about each candidate. And I noticed that every person said, "Oh, Ron Paul, but he can never win." And I just never understood that. I just remember being younger and thinking, well, why? People just say, well, he just doesn't have a chance. And well, what does that mean? I mean, it was a redundant circle of, you know, no one really knowing sure, but it was a definitive statement that he definitely would not win, which is my first kind of, you know, questioning. I was scratching my head there thinking, you know, well, what does this mean? Volunteered and donated and did my share in 2012. Sadly, I'm from New Jersey, and you know, just given our primary status and being a very blue state, he didn't perform very well there. But I came across this organization just through networking, U.S. term limits, and the goal as a 501c4 and a C3, to educate people and to advocate for the issue of term limits. It's a very plausible reform because it can be applied to pretty much any office. Generally, we only advocate for term limits in elected positions. It's just a likely check, you know, appointments are different in the fact that, you know, you're supposed to elect the right representatives in order for them to appoint the right people. I think that term limits are very common, but they're just not found in particular offices. Each office or legislative body is formed on its own. You know, town governments are formed on their own, or municipal governments. State governments are generally formed, you know, at this point, geographically, there's not much room left, but state governments are already pretty much established. we have term limits for the presidency and not for Congress. And I think that's really a head scratcher in itself, too. People just generally ask, well, why is that? I mean, it just makes, you know, people immediately understand the connection and why it's necessary for the president, but why hasn't it happened for Congress? And it did actually happen. The Articles of Confederation included term limits. It was called rotation in office. But when we adopted the Constitution, the anti-term limits folks won the day, and it was excluded along with the presidential term limits up until the 50s. That was an ode to Washington. Just out of respect, people would step down after two consecutive terms. People just generally abided by that until Roosevelt. But for Congress, it didn't come to be for obvious reasons. You know, the legislators didn't want to limit their own power, and they made excuses as to why it wasn't necessary. And for the greater part of American history up until the 20th century, generally, people did go to Washington, do their fair share, and go home. It wasn't really until the 20th century and advancements in technology like electricity and the ease of travel were people more prone to staying in Washington as it's feasible. You know, nowadays you can literally, you know, it may take you a while, but you can fly from Washington, D.C. to Alaska in one day. You can go anywhere geographically in the States in one day. Back then, you know, just to go to one side of the colonies, it could take you, you know, a couple months. So I think the founders, rightfully so, some of them were skeptical to the idea of term limits as to, you know, it was just physically impossible to sacrifice, you know, a decade of your life to be a legislator in a newly formed country. Mm-hmm. But nowadays it's very different. You know, anyone who's got a couple million bucks and, you know, a nice suit can run for Congress and generally win. They play their cards right. And it's just become a cesspool. You know, the most important thing is once a congressman gets elected is to get reelected. I was, you know, at a personal level, just being a Floridian, being, a Liberty Republican, Congressman David Jolly, he's a two-term congressman, from the Tampa Bay area. He's kind of a moderate, if you would say. He said, you know, and again, philosophically, I don't think he was a great congressman, but he made a great argument for term limits. When he was first elected, I think in 2014 or 2015, it was a special election. His first day in Washington as a congressman, a staffer of his just slapped a big phone book on his desk and said, start dialing. And he, you know, just kind of looked at them puzzled. And he's like, what do you mean? You know, I got to go to my committee assignment. I have to, you know, pick out the drapes, et cetera. And they're like, no, you don't understand. Like, you need to start fundraising now.
Yep.
there's no, that's your number one priority here is to stay. It's not to get all these little tasks done. And realistically, in a seniority based system, that is how it works. You know, whether we like it or not, you know, when you're a first term congressman, the chances of your bill getting passed that you introduce is, you know, little to none. I remember a couple years back, Congressman Ted Yoho from Central Florida. He's a pretty decent Republican, and he was one of the, you know, one of maybe a dozen legislators ever to have a bill passed as a freshman, you know, a bill that they've introduced themselves. It's just very unlikely. And I think that U.S. term limits has just been a trailblazer for this. There's not really any other term limits groups. Other people support the idea of term limits as an issue, but we're just a single issue group, and that's the only thing that we focus on. And for any level of government, whether it be city council, dog catcher, Congress, state legislator, if a president in another country is trying to ignore their term limits that the people put on them, we're going to talk about it. It's really one of the most fundamental reforms that really do preserve liberty and freedom, because it's very, you know, cut and dry. You're either going to obey the term limits or not. you know, you're either going to be in office or you're going to go back home. There's no real discrepancy as to if you're following it or not.
Right.
It's not as if, you know, it's opinionated. It's just such a widely supported measure. The only people that really, you know, try and stop term limits are just the politicians themselves and the special interests they represent.
That actually is a great segue to the main question I was going to start out with. And that is, number one, why term limits? Like, what's the value behind term limits? And then number two, looking at these respective politicians and the special interest groups, what incentive would there be for them to pass a law that would essentially limit their own power within their respective legislatures?
Enjoying today's episode? Take a second to share today's episode with family and friends on social media. Want to do even more? Swing over to iTunes and give The Brian Nichols Show a rate and review.
Yeah, it's like getting a chicken to vote for Colonel Sanders, you know, why? The only instance of a state legislature where this has happened, so there's 15 state legislatures that have term limits. About, I think it's 36 governors out of 50 states have term limits, but only in the state of Louisiana were term limits ever passed on themselves. Excuse me. If you're familiar, 26 states have the initiative and referendum process where citizens can petition to put a question on the ballot, whether to amend by statute or a constitutional amendment. It varies in each state. But in the early 90s, U.S. term limits helped spearhead this initiative in a bunch of different states around the country, like California and Arkansas and Florida, to term limit their state legislature and their members of Congress by the petition process. About 20 of them actually did so. But a lot of them also included the clause to term limit their members of Congress, but only for their own state's delegation. So, for instance, in Florida, the amendment that was passed said that there would be 4 2-year terms for members of the Florida House, 2 4-year terms for the members of the Florida Senate, and the members of or every congressional member from Florida was limited to 4 4-year terms. This happened, you know, within 4 years, 20 states passed these measures, because we figured that Congress wouldn't do it on their own. It would take a number of states to put the pressure on. And by the time that all the other states had done it, everyone would just follow suit and the dominoes would fall into place. But a congressman from Arkansas named Ray Thornton challenged us in the Supreme Court of the United States. It's called U.S. Term Limits versus Thornton in 1995. Clarence Thomas actually wrote the dissent. And it stated that in order to pass term limits for members of Congress, it had to be done universally, had to be done for all members. It couldn't be done for each state individually. And that it had to be done via constitutional amendment. So in 98, after the Republicans retook the House, a bill was brought forth to the floor, and a majority of members of Congress actually did vote to term limit themselves, but they couldn't come to a consensus as to what the actual term limits would be, and they failed to reach the 2/3 threshold necessary to pass a constitutional amendment. It was basically just a dog and pony show for them to say that they voted for term limits, and nothing came about it.
Mm-hmm.
And sadly, the issue was never seriously taken up again. Every session, someone will file a bill in Congress. The biggest hurdle is really the committee it gets put in. And we have a bill every session, and we've got nearly 60 co-sponsors in either chamber. There's no other bill that has nearly as much support for us or as us. It calls for 3 2-year terms in the House, 2 6-year terms in the Senate. There's also a grandfathering clause that states the clock on the term limits wouldn't start ticking until the amendment was ratified. So once it's proposed in Congress, let's say it passes, you're going to need about 300 members in the House at least, and about 70 members in the Senate to pass it. So, you know, a big threshold to break. going back to what you didn't ask me initially was why term limits? And I think that the biggest answer was an unaccountable government, the British government. The first term limit, as I noted, you know, it may have been included in the Articles of Confederation, but the real issue at hand was for the executive power, for the state, the presidency. And Washington was the first leader, major leader that was willing to step down, in this era. Not since Roman times had an executive had the option to sit down. And even that ultimately failed with Julius Caesar, who refused to step down as the consul and became a dictator for life. It even shows then that the law really has to be chiseled into place as opposed to out of respect. And Washington did that. He stepped down after 2 4-year terms and shocked the world. You know, everyone had no idea, you know, why would he do that? He could be a king. He could lead the world into a brighter future. And he did, but he led by example. He realized that the power concentrated in himself wasn't really a necessary recipe for a free world. It's the power in every individual. It's not about one person ruling over another. And the term limit is really what separated the United States as a unique country. You know, people had heard of democracies before. And, the idea of a republic, again, in Roman times, you know, these forms of government had been tested out. Wasn't necessarily a mystery, even though they weren't common in the 17th century. But the term limit was unique, and it was followed through, too. Fortunately, out of respect, you know, Washington's example was so strong that, as I mentioned earlier, not until the 50s did someone actually try and thwart them. And very quickly, it was fizzled out. But because of the other term limit that we experience in life, it's called death. you know, there's only a certain amount of time we can have to designate to certain tasks. And that's what happened with FDR. He ran for a third term and squashed his opponent. And once he ran for a fourth term, just about 2 to 3 months later, he passed away. And Harry Truman, his vice president, came to power. And Truman, instead of seeing the writing on the wall and stepping down to return as a hometown hero, he decided to run for re-election. And the Republicans had retook Congress in that session. They had been out for nearly a decade because of FDR. The Democrats had so much control in the 40s because of World War II. And when Truman got in there, he was challenged in his primary. If you recall, Iowa and New Hampshire, they're some of the first states in their presidential primaries and caucuses. And in the New Hampshire primary in 1952, Truman actually lost as a sitting president in a primary to a U.S. senator from Tennessee, whose name escapes me, I apologize, and was humiliated and went home. And the Congress passed the amendment for presidential term limits, the 22nd Amendment in 51. It was ratified in 53, I believe. Or that wouldn't make any sense because he lost the nomination in 52. I think it was 51, but regardless, it shows that the people who go against term limits just go down in flames. You know, there's no question about it. Especially the people that oppose term limits currently. You name it. Who's a senior member of Congress that's been there for 20 years? I guarantee that they oppose term limits. except for Ron Paul may have been the one exception. I actually had the pleasure of seeing Ron Paul at a fundraiser in Melbourne, Florida, about a month or two ago, and actually came to find out that Ron Paul was actually one of the first members of Congress in recent history, I think it was in 74, to introduce the constitutional amendment for term limits on Congress. So the one person can be in D.C. for an extended period of time and still have some sanity.
Want to support The Brian Nichols Show? Please consider making a one-time PayPal donation at thebriannicholsshow@gmail.com or join the Patreon at bnicholsliberty.
One of the issues I know a lot of people have with term limits, and I don't think it's necessarily a wrong fear to have, is not so much the turnover in the congressional seats or whatever seat it may be. But let's just say, you know, for instance, let's use Congress as the example here. One of the fears I know has been discussed is the fear of having a staff that basically is administrative staff to the point that they're the ones who are now making the laws, and they're not even elected, because now you have this staff that's going to be carrying over from one representative to the other. So, for example, let's look in I live in Philadelphia. We are almost guaranteed to have our congressional district seats be Democratic, being Democratic Party every single election. So, John Doe exactly. Yeah. So John Doe wins his congressional seat. He does his three terms, 6 years. He's out, and now it's replaced with just, you know, cookie cutter Democratic Congressman number two. And the staff carries over to keep on promoting and enacting the same policies. So what's the answer to that very real fear? Is there a time limit on staff? What's the U.S. term limits approach to that?
So I think to clarify again, we generally support term limits for, you know, whatever the position may be, but truly we do only advocate for them in elected positions. And realistically, staffers are not elected, as you had mentioned. You know, they're in essence appointed by the members of Congress. So what the bottom line is that what we're really looking at here is a heart issue. It's not a control issue. So obviously you don't want staffers taking control of, you know, their members as if they're a puppet. You know, we don't want that. We want the people we elect to be accountable to us. We don't want to have to go through a middleman to our own representative, right? But you can't control who gets picked or who doesn't. Sadly, you know, the members themselves literally single-handedly choose the staffers. There's no way around it. You can't, you know, if someone proposes, you know, a way to elect staffers, you know, I'm all ears. But it you know, it's a job, and that part's not elected. And sadly, if we don't have the right representatives in there, we're going to get, you know, garbage staffers that are going to control the scenes. And you're 100% right. You know, I've seen it firsthand. Especially people turn over, like you had mentioned, literally the staffers will stay in the same seat or district, you know, for decades on end while, you know, numerous representatives for whatever reason have come in and out, you know, they've retired or just moved on to the next big thing. And the staffers just stick around and hold on to the seat. But if you don't have new members in there, it's not going to happen. You know, one other reform that could potentially, you know, handle some of these issues, as you said, you know, it's the same Democratic representative, and same thing in New Jersey. It's very common. It's just the same Democratic representative. They're not very different. To fix gerrymandering. But as a single issue organization, you know, if we had newer members in there on a regular basis, as opposed to every 10 years or so when someone steps down, you know, that would be substantially better. At least we'd have a fighting chance, as opposed to just getting stuck with the same guy. But ultimately, you know, it is a heart issue. You know, term limits aren't a silver bullet. We don't change people's moral behavior based off term limits. You know, if term limits get passed, there will still be, you know, a corrupt guy getting elected at some point or another. sadly, you know, we want the best representatives we can find, but without term limits, there's no other way of getting to the best representative. You know, we need as much turnover as possible to find that best guy. And it just gives us the best fighting chance we have. You'll still get some bad guys in there, but overall, at least, you know, in Philadelphia, Brian Nichols could be the congressman in, you know, 15 years as opposed to 40.
I don't know if that's ever going to be the case, but
I would hope not, my friend. Don't go to the dark side.
Well, so now there comes actually a really important question. And that is, okay, well, we have these career politicians like, you know, Lindsey Graham or the late John McCain. And yeah, they were terrible in terms of policies or in Lindsey Graham's case, still terrible in policy. But then you have individuals like Ron Paul or Justin Amash, Thomas Massey, Rand Paul, Mike Lee, Ted Cruz, who maybe they're not 100% in some regards, you know, on the Liberty score, but they're pretty close to being that, you know, 90 plus threshold. And now, unfortunately, we're pushing those good representatives of Liberty out. And then we don't have those voices. So look at Ron Paul, for instance. He was in Congress for, over 20 some odd years. He would have been out, you know, and we would never have been able to see the career of Ron Paul that then helped elevate him in 2008 to really be the only libertarian and common sense voice on that debate stage. And then in 2012 to really have his presidential run. So isn't there a risk of actually having a negative backlash to those advocates that are actually going to be these stalwarts in Congress that are going to promote liberty ideas and promote hopefully an alternative to what is the status quo in Congress being more status issues, more, you know, more endless wars, more war on drugs, et cetera, et cetera.
Connect with Brian on Twitter and Facebook at @BNicholsLiberty and send your comments and questions to thebriannicholsshow@gmail.com.
Oh, it's definitely, the case, you know, we will lose a good guy or two, but people like Ron Paul are willing to admit that term limits aren't going to work unless they apply for everyone. There's no way around it. And we've learned that lesson too, in essence, in the 90s. You know, they have to apply for everyone unilaterally. It can't be picking and choosing. But here's the silver lining to it is that though we may lose a Ron Paul or a Thomas Massey or Justin Amash, we could get 100 new ones with term limits. I guarantee that once this amendment passes, you're going to see the biggest influx of people running for office that we've ever seen before. And we're going to multiply in numbers. But I think that what's the sacrifice? You know, are we going to say, hey, you know, we've got a couple of good guys and, you know, we're satisfied with that. I mean, we need as many good ones as there. In there as we can get, and I think that it's just we can't take that opportunity and just, you know, leave it at the door. And the fact that, you know, we're going to lose one or two guys, it will be unfortunate, but we need to multiply and for any, you know, sector, you know, any political philosophy, you know, it doesn't matter, any whatever better person you can get in there is substantially better than what we have now. And I think to answer it as well is that with the bill we propose, that there is a grandfathering clause. So let's say it passes this next session. We're not going to see the term limits actually take effect for, you know, give or take a decade. So who's in there right now, for the most part, will still be there by the time the term limits actually take effect and could potentially, you know, affect those members that passed it.
All right. Awesome. So, you know, obviously here we are, we're recording at the end of October. November election for the midterms is coming right around the corner. I would love to hear, as someone being the advocate for the U.S. Term Limits Organization, what should voters look for in terms of supporting candidates? Is there a way that, you know, you have endorsed candidates based on their supporting term limits, or anywhere that folks can go ahead, number one, and find the U.S. Term Limits Organization? But again, to find those candidates that would support term limits going into 2018.
So we have a record number of candidates that have signed a pledge we give to any candidate running for Congress. Some of your listeners may be familiar with the group Americans for Tax Reform. We're similar in the fact that we give all candidates a pledge running. Americans for Tax Reform pledge states that when and if elected, you won't raise taxes or vote to raise taxes by any way, shape, or form. And to their own success, you know, they've been very influential in that, you know, spending may have increased in D.C., but at least the taxes have been restrained for better or for worse by seeing the effects of a pledge. So we don't endorse candidates. We're nonpartisan, but candidates endorse us when they sign our pledge. The pledge we have for Congress, because we have a few, we have a pledge we give to presidential candidates. We have a pledge I give to, or we give to candidates running for the state legislature here in Florida that already has term limits. It states that when and if elected, that they will defend the term limits that are already in place. But for Congress, our pledge states that when and if elected, they will co-sponsor and vote for our amendment that calls for 3 2-year terms in the House and 2 6-year terms in the Senate, with this grandfathering clause that states, as I mentioned earlier, the effects would not start taking place until the amendment was ratified by 3/4 of the states. So, we have a record number of people that have signed the pledge this year, but there's still plenty that have not signed. Overall, candidate running for the state legislature or for Congress, we have over 750 candidates who are running this cycle sign a pledge in support of term limits in one shape or another. So we are seriously, we're going to see a lot of progress this next session. And for Congress alone, I know that the number, as of today, I don't have exactly, but I know that we're over 375 candidates have signed this cycle for Congress. So if you know a candidate that is running, please go to termlimits.com/pledge and you can view the pledge. But it's very straightforward, and have them sign it. You know, make them take a public stand for term limits. Don't wait for your congressman to be in office to have to ask them the question, because once they're in that chair, you can pretty much guarantee that they're going to tell you they don't support term limits once they're elected. But once, when they're on the campaign trail, though, is when they might be a little more receptive. So while you still can, you know, we've got a week left. Give one, you know, any candidate can sign as long as, you know, they're running this cycle. There's no, you know, eligibility factor if they, you know, their chances of success are big or little. We want everyone to take a stand for term limits, candidates big and small. But yeah, we don't endorse candidates, but they endorse us.
that's a nice way to support your organization. we don't endorse them. They endorse us. All right.
They do. Well, also too, I mean, you know, the polling, for the record, is off the charts. I mean, the polling is like over 80%. Even some polls have shown like close to 90% support for term limits. So truthfully, you know, you can speak to even a majority of candidates support term limits. It's just really not the ones that are elected that oppose it, but really everyone, you know, it's so easy to find support for it. And that shows you how concentrated power in DC actually is. The fact that you can go up to any random Joe on the street, 9 out of 10, 8 out of 10 people are going to tell you that they agree with you. Really shows you how concentrated power is in DC, because there's the ones that are holding the floodgates.
Well, Austin Seckel, you are one of the good guys. Thank you so much for all you're doing there at U.S. Term Limits. Definitely, it's a very important issue, and unfortunately, it's not an issue that's being discussed as of late with the 28 midterms coming around the corner, because, you know, it's not sexy. It's not, you know, whoever Trump's sleeping with 1 week or slept with, you know, 2 years ago, or it's not the Mueller investigation or Kavanaugh or you name it, caravans of people coming from the southern border. But it's an important issue nonetheless. So with that being said, I'm going to most definitely include the links to not only the U.S. Term Limits website, but also I'm going to include all the social media links so folks can go ahead and follow U.S. Term Limits and follow you on social media. But before I do that, maybe if you can give them a shout out to where people can find you so they can keep on hearing all the new happenings in the term limits scene.
Yes, I never shut up talking about term limits. I can attest to that. I'm very tedious about it, and I will honestly, whether I'm working full time for U.S. Term Limits or not, I will be in the term limits movement for eternity. And same goes for the Liberty Movement too. I always have a heart for you guys as well. Just I consider myself part of it. But for U.S. term limits' sake, it's not philosophical. It's all about term limits. but you can follow me on Twitter. It's just at my name, Austin Seckel. I'm pretty much just on there. And give me a shout anytime you want to talk about term limits, or if you have a campaign or want to get started in your community, or you're interested in about term limits in general, send me a message. I'm happy to answer any more questions about it too. It's always a pleasure speaking with you, Brian. I think we've been following each other on Twitter for quite some time now, and I'm not sure what's taken me so long to get on your show sooner, but I really appreciate you having me on, my friend, and I look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Absolutely, buddy. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us for another fun-filled episode of The Brian Nichols Show. Again, if you enjoyed today's show, please give it a like and review on iTunes. Share today's show with your friends and family. And as always, follow me on Twitter at @BNicholsLiberty and on Facebook at @BNicholsLiberty. Make a one-time PayPal donation at thebriannicholsshow@gmail.com. And go ahead and swing over to my Patreon at @BNicholsLiberty and become a fan and subscriber of the show. But until next week, folks, it's Brian Nichols signing off here in The Brian Nichols Show for Austin Seckel of U.S. Term Limits. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to The Brian Nichols Show. Find more episodes at briannicholsshow.com.